Welcome to The Revenue Architects. I'm your host, Jeff Ignacio. In this podcast, we're going to bring incredible business athletes together. We'll explore how to build a go-to-market capability for businesses, no matter the size or shape. We'll remix content from a bunch of different places, bring in guests, deep dive into incredible topics. So with that in mind, I want to thank you for joining us. And now on to this episode of The Revenue Architects. Today, we are joined by Mallory Lee. She runs revenue operations at Terminus. Mallory, quote unquote, grew up in marketing ops, starting at ExactTarget and Salesforce. She's a marketing automation junkie and a B2B consultant. She moved into revenue operations almost 2 years ago when she joined Terminus. She leads a team that covers Salesforce technology and systems, RevOps management, and also business intelligence and analytics. She lives in Indiana and has three boys running around to keep her busy, which I'm sure doesn't give her some sleep for the long hours that revenue operations already goes through. Her only hobby is work, and that's why she's here today, and for fun, obviously. So Mallory, appreciate you coming onto the show and joining me today.
Hi, thank you. Good to be here.
So you and I have talked on and off quite a bit through Pavilion, formerly known as Revenue Collective. And you know, one thing I've always admired about your experience is that you've actually come from the world of marketing, have been a marketer yourself, and have performed much of the operational task around it. So, you know, one burning question that I have in our field is, you know, who should revenue operations report to? I'm very curious from your perspective, you know, what is the most optimal reporting structure?
Yeah, great question, and definitely a hot topic that I do hear a lot about. I think it can work well in almost any part of the business. If the right leadership is aligned on the right things, then I don't think it matters too much. But I report to our CFO at Terminus, and I really like that. It keeps us kind of right in the middle of all the things, very objective, and a very tight relationship to finance, which is sometimes hard to come by when you're trying to break out of sales and get closer to finance. So I really like that setup and still have a super close relationship with the rest of the ELT. I like it.
Just to clarify, ELT is Executive Leadership Team for those listeners who are uninitiated. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I think everyone probably has an EL something.
So I have not reported to a CFO, and I run revenue operations at a startup called Upkeep, but I do have appreciation. I've come from an FP&A background. And so there's a sense of, one, having that, you know, unbiased balance and check inside of a company. But I'm curious, do you lose a little bit of that business acumen just because of the reporting structure? Or is it, you know, the other way around? You actually provide a lot of business acumen up to the finance organization.
I would say it's the latter. I think that there's a deeper understanding of how the rest of the business is working since we're a part of the team. I would probably guess that none of my job is any different based on where I report to. There's no activity that we don't get to do because we're not under our CRO, but it's just kind of a nice, objective party to bounce ideas off of and a good way to make sure that we're splitting all of the resources super evenly across the business, because we do support sales and marketing and customer success and our product team. And really every team under the whole Terminus umbrella.
So Terminus, who's on the ELT? Is there a COO? I'm curious why ops reports into the CFO.
Yeah, that's a good guess. We don't have a COO. I think that if we did, then that could be, you know, a different home for us. But actually our CFO, his name's Oliver, he came up through RevOps and found his path to CFO. So it's a really good alignment because he's got so much background in RevOps and he really understands, you know, what the team is setting out to do. So that's really great from a support perspective. But we do have the rest of the seats filled. We've got, you know, CMO and CRO both, which I know isn't always the case for everybody. And then we've got like our chief product officer, chief technology officer, bunch of folks up there on that ELT.
That's a full stack team. I'm actually a fan of the twin tower structure of a CMO and CRO. It provides perspective, right? Particularly for account based, and we'll get into that in a minute as well. So all too often, I actually see RevOps roles filled with former sales operations titles. So it's almost as if I see CROs, they're almost formerly VPs of sales. Very few times do you see like a VP of marketing actually move into CRO role. At least that's what appears from the outside looking in. So I'm curious to hear about your journey taking the marketing operations route. Where do you see the profession of marketing ops fitting in within the context of quote unquote RevOps?
Yeah, it's a great question too. I mean, I think that marketing ops can oftentimes be large enough that it's the last thing to kind of get slid under the RevOps umbrella. And it's also kind of been around even longer than like the classic RevOps title, I would say. So for me, I think it's a great background. When I was doing marketing operations, basically my chief focus was return on investment and then alignment with sales. And so if those two things are the focus, I think it lays a really strong foundation to actually begin supporting sales and learning more about their day-to-day and finding ways to make their lives more efficient and better and to improve the bottom line. So I think the overlap there is really strong. And, we do have some pieces of marketing operations at Terminus that don't fall under my team, but we still have a dedicated marketing ops manager in the RevOps group that's a very tight liaison back to our marketing leadership team. So it's a little bit of a hybrid structure, and it's nice to be able to be flexible with that.
Awesome. So tell me a little bit more about the team. Like, besides yourself, who's on the team? Like, what roles do they have?
Yeah, we have kind of three big chunks of the team I like to think about. We have the BI and analytics team, which is a team of one right now. So that's going to encompass our data warehouse, things like CDP, all of the cohort analysis that we do for ourselves and for our board. And then all the way on this other side, we have Salesforce and systems. And so that's another team of one today with a Salesforce developer / admin who really holds the keys to a lot of the work done in the system and a lot of integration. And then in the middle, we have a whole bunch of people doing RevOps that are kind of partnering directly with the people in the business to either get their concerns or their requests or provide them with reporting. And then they kind of bring all that back to the team. We get everything together and prioritize it. And then we either take it to Salesforce land where we need work done, or we take it to the BI land where we need analysis done, and just kind of keep everything feeding through. And my goal is that all of the technology we use can be set up in a way that gives us that data we need back out on the other side. And you only get that data if you've engineered like a process for people to use the technology correctly so that the data comes out on the other end. So getting all of that to line up and then trying to keep all the friends happy is the name of the game.
I think it's a smart structure. You've separated out kind of the systems administration and then kind of the overall data operations, the architecture. Trying to smash that into one person is actually quite difficult just because of the nature of the skill sets. And oftentimes you learn one and you can spend a whole 10 years really learning that craft. So I'm curious, like the CDP, something that a lot of companies have started to explore. But for those who aren't familiar with the CDP, like what is it and what value does it unlock for you?
Yeah, this is such a hot topic right now. And to be clear, it's an emerging place for us. So we don't have all the answers on this. But David, our BI analyst, has started connecting all of these dots across the different tools that we use. And I think a lot of people have probably experienced this where, you can like customize anything in Salesforce. It can hold anything that you want to put into it. But is that the right choice? Probably not. It's not great for trending. It's not great for the historical analysis. And so we have more and more started using tools like Snowflake and Tableau, and then we use a tool called Census to pipe the data back into Salesforce. So we will actually do calculations on our opportunities or on the accounts in Snowflake, and then we send it back in. because our ability to do calculations in Snowflake is so much deeper and so much more vast. And so it's really taking the burden off of doing, you know, like a UI facing formula in Salesforce that always maxes out, it's always too long, right? We're able to do all of that outside of the system and then send it in. So that is one of the lowest hanging pieces of fruit that we have found by doing things outside of the system. But then in addition to that, you know, our customers work with us to do account-based advertising. And we've got a whole world of measurement around their campaigns and their spending and the impressions that we're getting for our customers. And so that data all pipes into Snowflake as well. And it's vast amounts of data, so we couldn't really put it anywhere else. And I think the notion of a CDP is really to be able to have one place where all of that data lives. And at any time, I can bounce a piece of information against this, like, you know, single source of truth, kind of golden record situation for all of our customers to really see what's happening to the fullest at that account. Whereas today, there are some disparate systems. So the CDP doesn't really quite exist for us yet. It's something that we're looking into, but I do hear about it more and more from a lot of people that might have a usage component to their product, or they might have just a ton of data and they're not having a lot of luck in Salesforce with the trending and analysis.
If you think about Salesforce, like what, 10, 15, 20 years ago, when they created the CRM, you know, you were selling probably an on-prem software and cloud was just starting to come into play. Now with the advent of all these mobile applications, you can actually start to onboard these customers with a free trial. So getting those product usage analytics are super important to unlock value and bring that into your top of funnel and your sales cycle. We use Census as well over at Upkeep. My background is actually in data warehousing. So building that unified data structure, what you call a golden record, to me is that Willy Wonka ticket to getting some real insights into your customer base. So I think if anyone's really looking at, you know, finding a way to create a unified view of their data, there's now options out there that weren't there before. Before, you'd have to engage with your engineering team. They'd have to build something custom, something that as a RevOps practitioner, you're just not privy to. You're like, I don't understand the maintenance, the upkeep, the roadmap around this. How do I get the data in? But now there are these plug and play tools. So really cool. I think you're ahead of the game there. I'm curious from your perspective, you know, moving from an IC to kind of a leadership role, how has marketing operations changed, you know, during the course of that time? And what have you learned along the way as you've, you know, kind of broadened your responsibilities?
Let's see. I would say in terms of the trends that have kind of come across my desk over the past, I don't even know how many years, you know, for a while, it was a lot around marketing automation. How do you get it integrated? What's the strategy? Segmentation was huge. I think that people still struggle to segment their, you know, their worlds effectively. And I think it changes a lot as well. So from my perspective, building something that makes sense today but can be adjusted in the future is not always the easiest thing to do and still very top of mind. I lived through the great, you know, GDPR launch, and there was so much around that, becoming an expert and trying to keep up with all of the privacy concerns that are out there today. We just opened an office in London, and I find myself trying to remember, okay, how do we do this? What's the rule? And so that stuff is really hard to keep up on. But, you know, a lot of the people that I talk to now and a lot of our customers, they are marketers that are trying to get to an account-based approach. And they're trying to figure out the right way to measure success when you've got an inbound funnel and you have an account-based funnel, and trying to figure out where those meet and how they overlap and how to report success on each of those, I think is something that kind of harkens back to the attribution question that people have had for a while. And I think that that's one of the most important things that I would love to help solve for today.
There's a lot to unpack there. I'm just trying to think, okay, this is like worms, right? We talked about compliance, how to stay on top of that, with or without an InfoSec team, launching into new markets, particularly EMEA. If you open up in Germany or England, you obviously are opening up a can of worms. California in itself is a unique state within the union. You've got the CCPA rules. Then you talked about attribution, segmentation, Super interesting. I think we can rabbit hole through a lot of these. But I want to move over to ABM a little bit. You know, marketing has been on this journey of quote unquote ABM, and I think a lot of it's been due to, you know, rebranding and categorization by tools and software vendors coming in to try to create a space. So that term account-based marketing has been in vogue for the last decade or so. Could you please describe, you know, in your opinion, what ABM is? And then I'd love to talk about like kind of trends in the industry and where you think we're going from here.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, for anyone who doesn't put it together yet, I will say full disclosure, I work at Terminus. We are an ABM vendor, and I am a past Terminus customer. So that definitely informs a lot of my perspective. But I would say for sure that ABM has been around for a very long time, far prior to companies like Terminus really kind of creating a space for it. And I remember back at ExactTarget 10 years ago, we had two different lead qual teams. We had lead qual and we had lead gen. And this is more than 10 years ago. And you know, a lot of things that we did were pretty advanced at that time. So I can't take credit for it. It was just kind of like that when I got there. But the lead qualification team, they followed up on inbound stuff. And the lead generation team, they were responsible for outbound cold calling and using account-based approaches to try to get into top accounts. And I remember we would do direct mail campaigns every quarter to try to get in front of these, you know, potential customers that were the highest priority for us. And lots of time and money spent to go outbound to these accounts. So I think that people have been doing that motion for a very long time. And it was really when account-based advertising came into play that the market started to coalesce around this and try to figure out, like, how do we make this work? And that's when the label came about. So from my perspective, account-based advertising is a super efficient way to spend your marketing budget. You're essentially choosing to show ads to just the companies that mean the most to you. And that could be your customers. I hope it is. It could be your top tiered target accounts that sales is looking to go after, or it could be any number of things. We have customers that use account-based advertising to target their own employees, you know, for events or morale or anything like that. So there's a lot of options there. But I think at the same time that account-based advertising became really important, you also saw intent data become really important. And there were developments around being able to identify, okay, there are people at this IP address that are visiting websites that contain content that has to do with this topic. And therefore, we can infer that this company is interested in this topic. And all of that information has just become much more widely available. A lot of players getting into that space. And really, it just comes down to the data. I think it's all about managing vast amounts of data, vast amounts of information, trying to help the sales team prioritize who's the next best person for me to talk to right now. And is that an inbound conversation or is that an outbound conversation? And I think that if account-based marketing is done well, you're able to have more of your sales team's time to be spent on top accounts as a percentage of total. I think, and I actually feel pretty strongly about some of this, but like, it's not going to change your inbound funnel, except it should make it higher quality. So the leads that you have coming in today, you know, maybe 1 out of 10 leads happens to be from your top account list, and everyone cheers when that happens. And it's like, yes. And you know, you kind of got lucky with that. But if ABM is done well, then like 2 or 3 or 4 of your inbound leads should be coming from your top account list because you've been targeting them. And you've been speaking to them in the right language and you've been calling them on the phone and they're just surrounded by love from your company. And I'm pretty convinced that the only reason that people ever pick up the phone for an outbound call is because they realize you're not going to stop bothering them. And it's like, okay, they're never going to stop calling me. I might as well answer and hear what they have to say. At least that's like my personal perspective. So as much as you can like surround these accounts and prove that you've researched them and that you're not going to give up, that's how you get them on the phone.
I think you're turning what good luck into a process, right? Rather than, you know, getting those, you know, 6 to 8% connect rate with probably a 75% non-closure, right? They're just hanging up on you or saying, I'm not interested. You're rallying around one, what they're searching, what they're concerned about, hopefully imbuing that into your content on the marketing side, as well as on what you call the lead qualification. I think a lot of teams would call that maybe the SDR, or the BDR teams, or actually arming your reps with killer process around how to create personalized content on the outbound side of the fence. I think that all it leads to kind of a higher quality. And the first company in the space against your peers that can do that well, I can tell you, is probably going to build a moat around their outbound and their account-based campaigns. So really interesting. You talked about the separation of lead gen and lead qualification. You know, when I came into the space of sales operations, there was already like an SDR team, and there was always this hot potato debate. Should they report to sales or should they report to marketing? I'm curious if that debate's been echoed in your hallways.
Yeah, I think every company goes through that. I've seen it ping pong at Terminus a couple times already, just in a couple of years. So I think it's similar to the question about where RevOps reports up to. I think it can work well in either department. It's really about which leader is passionately dedicated to that team and has the right experience and wants to take it on, because it's a really, really tough gig. So it requires a lot of passion, I think.
Yeah, shout out to those directors and senior directors of sales development out there.
Exactly.
It's not an easy gig. I briefly managed a few SDRs and realized I was completely out of my depth.
Same here. I used to call them my kids.
So thank you. We're in our last segment. I call it the Rorschach test. So how this works, I'm just going to say a few words, and I'd love to hear the first thing that comes to your mind. So if you're ready, let's go.
All right.
Personalization versus relevance.
Oh, I think about marketing automation for that one. You know, having your email content, it's still something that's foundational, and people have been doing it forever, but remains super important.
Now, B2B versus B2C.
This one, I instantly think of marketing cloud, because there's so many different options out there, and some are B2B and some are B2C, and some people don't know which one they belong to.
Now, MQL, real or not?
I would say real.
Marketing qualified account.
Very real. Separate but different, but both real.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks don't often talk about MQL, but on LinkedIn, no one talks about MQAs, if you've ever noticed. All right, field marketing post-COVID.
Oh, man. I would say this is emerging. We've started conversations here. We've taken some polls, and I think people are ready to get back out there. So when done well, hopefully on a rooftop, I think it's time to go.
I'm ready for some live events and cocktails with customers personally. All right, deal velocity.
Oh, deal velocity. This is one to measure. This is something built into the way we do measurement in the Terminus platform. I think it's all about highest possible fit and going as fast as you can, with the understanding that bigger deals take time. So something to keep an eye on for sure.
All right. Publishing enterprise pricing.
Publishing enterprise pricing. Oh, you're killing me. You know, I'm in the no camp on that one, mainly competitive. That's my main reason for that.
All right. SDRs and inbound.
SDRs and inbound. They go by literally a zillion names. I like it best when there are dedicated people following up on inbound and dedicated people going outbound to target accounts, but I prefer for them to be on the same team.
And pipeline management last.
Oh, pipeline management. This makes me think of diligence. It's a never, never, never ending task. And at Terminus, we have a pipeline council that meets twice a week. And so it's a huge group of people that are dedicated to just pipeline and forecasting and generating as much pipeline as we can. So very high priority.
That's awesome. Mallory, I want to thank you for joining us today. Where can our listeners find out more about you?
Oh, man. I would say my LinkedIn page is probably the right place. Takes me a week or so to get back to a message, but I do get back to them.
All right. Thanks again. Thanks, Mallory.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.